Hey fam, it's Kanisha here. Welcome to Fam Talk. In case you don't know, this is a podcast that is dedicated to demonstrating and encouraging open and honest conversations. Now, just a few weeks ago, I sat down with my good friend Kristen, and we had a conversation that I'm excited to share with you today. It went a lot of different places. We touch on friendship, nomadic life, and the concept of home. So, let's just get into it. So tell the people why you're a nomad.
I'm currently in a supply chain rotation program, which is a leadership development program, and I do three rotations. So I spend 9 months at one job, learn that area of the business, and then move on to another one. It's to help you become a more well-rounded leader in the future. But the benefit is that I get to go live in a new city about every 9 months. So after I graduated college, I moved to LA, lived there for 9 months. I'm currently living in Philadelphia, and I'm soon going to move to Cincinnati. So kind of jumping all over the country.
And have you felt like in any of those places you felt like it was home, or like you've built some sort of like connection to it?
I try to make every place home because no one place is home. I try to live my life very comfortably in whatever place I am. Even though it's temporary, I set up my house like this is my home. There's art on the walls. There are real plates and dishes, real furniture, because when you have to move so much, you need something to be comfortable.
Yeah.
But in terms of
Community?
It's a trick question, because community takes time to grow in each place you are. And so in 9 months, it's kind of hard to set up a deep connection with community. But I think the best community I've had so far was in Cali, just with the people I met. And as you get closer to the end of your stay, you really see how you have bonded with the people. Yeah. And how you don't want to leave, but you're excited to go to the new place.
And like, in addition to the short term stints that you have in these various locations, you also like have been traveling a lot.
Yeah.
How many places have you been this past year? 2019, because this probably will be up in 2020.
23 different cities. And I categorize it by, I had to be in that city doing something. So it's not like a layover on the flight.
Yeah.
It's not just driving through. Like, there had to be some activity done in that area. Some memory made or some activity done. About 6, 7 were out of the country. We're like different cities outside the country.
Mm-hmm.
The rest were just around the U.S.
And how do you feel like the nomadic lifestyle fits in with your personality? Because, like, for me, like, people tell me that they would assume that I am, I don't know if free spirit is a word that I'm trying to think of, but I don't necessarily feel that way because I have a very strong need for some
plans
stability
and order.
Stability. I need, like, because I love traveling, but I also like really relaxing when I'm traveling. Like, I need to like build in that time to like just be like, mm-hmm. Just sitting, not going. And I also really, really, really love coming home. Like,
at the end of your traveling
day? At the
day?
End of my trip, yeah.
Oh, the end of your trip. Yeah, not like, even, like, going back to your hotel or Airbnb.
No, like, I really love going home. I love traveling, but I really love coming home. And that's why I try, like, anytime I'm leaving, I need to make sure, like,
it's
everything
clean
is
and in order.
Clean and in order. Because I love, like, walking through the door and, like, seeing my things and, like, being yeah. in my space. Like, yeah. even, like, you're here visiting me right now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like having my friends see my space, like be in my
your arena.
Yeah. And because like most of my friends are not here with me, like it means something to me to be able to be like, oh, I'm going to this place and they can visualize it. I was just talking with a friend the other day about like one of her friends and how I had this whole picture of what he looked like. And like she sent me a picture 2 days ago and homeboy is so different than I had imagined him. And I'm like, this is messing with me.
But that's like when you watch a movie, well, you read a book and then you see the movie and you're like, no, my imagination was better.
Yeah.
I've definitely seen that happen with us when I'm talking to you on the phone and or I describe my apartment and then you come and actually see my apartment and you're like, wait a minute.
I get it now because I feel like even though you've showed it to me on FaceTime or whatever, it doesn't really make sense. Like even when you walked in here into my house, you were like, oh, it's like not the same size I thought it was. I thought it was like this. I thought that was like over there. And it's like, oh, it makes more sense. And I'm like, for me and my personality, it's so important for me to be able to like share moments with people. And like, so even when
And how can you share that moment if you don't know the setting?
Is like, the yeah, like number one, like you're not there. So like there's an element that like you're not going to be there, period. Yeah. But at least you can like visualize it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway. So what do you think, like, what aspects of your personality do you think play into the nomadic lifestyle for you?
So I think a strong part of it is I don't like to miss out on opportunities. So the majority of my travel this year has been based on there was an opportunity to go somewhere. Someone said, hey, do you want to go here? And I'm like, yeah, why not? What else am I doing this weekend?
Yeah.
And so I'm just very much a jump on board kind of traveler.
So basically FOMO.
Yeah.
Fear of missing out.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But also, if there wasn't much going on in my city, mm-hmm. like when I was in Philly, then why wouldn't I go hang out with friends in some other city?
Yeah, it's like, stay here and like do the like heavy work of trying to make a new community when I'm gonna leave anyway.
Yeah.
And it's gonna like, I don't even know if it's gonna pan out. Yeah. So why not just go be with the people that
That's absolutely already, right. Yeah.
And I think it's so interesting, like, because as you know, Kristen, others may not know. I think I've said this on the podcast. There's a lot of things I say on the podcast. But anyway, my favorite word is she's looking at me crazy. My favorite word is why. My favorite question is why, actually. Mm. And so I think it's interesting, like, being able to see how the way a person thinks about life, like, alters the way they approach it and, like, the things that they opt into or out of doing. Because I think, like, when you, like, understand the why behind something, people just make so much more sense to you, and you can, like, appreciate the things that they value more. Because it's like, if you just take it based on, like, what you value, then it's like,
Why are you doing that?
Why are you doing this?
That doesn't make any sense.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
And then you can, I feel like it can make you, like, a better friend, because I'll probably post JL's interview before this, but we talked about how, like, when you're answering a question to a friend, say a friend calls you and they're like, oh, I'm having this situation.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's more helpful if you help them answer the question in the way that they think. Like, if you use their frame of mind to help them reason through how to answer it.
Yes. Or even just what is the best answer for them, not the best answer for you.
Yeah.
Actually, I like to have both. If I come and ask you for advice, tell me what you would do, but then also say, Kristen, based on how I know you and your personality and the things you value, and this sounds like the best answer for you.
And even, like, if someone doesn't ask that, you can ask, like, hey, like, do you want me to answer, like, what I would do or what I think you would prefer to do?
Yeah.
Because that's, like, very different. Because, I mean, sometimes people want a different perspective.
Yeah.
But usually they just want to think it through and not regret whatever they decide to do.
So the difference between coaching and problem-solving for someone else. Well, coaching should be that you have a relationship.
Oh, coaching them to make their own decisions.
To make their own decisions,
okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's asking questions, getting down to the bottom of it. But at the end of the day, they get to figure out the answer for themselves. You're not just giving them an answer.
I was thinking of coaching in the sense of, like,
basketball.
A basketball coach. Like, no, you got to do this play. Like, what were you doing? I told you.
No. I meant like leadership coaching.
Yeah. I mean, and I also have no frame of reference for what a basketball coach does. So maybe that's all wrong, but I feel like it's not. I feel like I've seen enough sports movies. Yeah. Because, I mean, if you're watching basketball TV, you don't see the coaches, like, explain. Like, you don't hear that huddle. So, I mean, I don't know.
We're going to say yes.
We are intelligent individuals. We can deduce what's going on in those.
We are not athletic individuals, clearly. I'm wondering if I finished answering your question about how my personality plays into the way I travel. Is that what you were asking?
So, basically, you're saying that you travel because you don't want to miss out on opportunities with others, or
yeah, they're just
miss out on the experiences that are available to you. If something falls in your lap, you're like, okay, I'm going to take this.
Right. There are just so many opportunities to do something fun and exciting and see something new that even though it may be exhausting to always be packing a suitcase and getting very little sleep before I travel.
Let me tell you about this girl. She does not care about exhaustion.
Nope.
She really does not. We were roommates, and so many times she would just like fall out on the couch. Like she would never go to sleep.
Nope.
She would just pass out, and then her glasses would be like twisted off her face. I'd have to like take her glasses off, put them on her little table,
which was greatly appreciated.
Try to make her go to bed.
Because if you go to bed, then it's like deciding that my day is over. Nothing else is going to happen. But if you just live in the moment until you fall asleep, then you didn't miss anything. You really get to enjoy every moment of it rather than deciding to cut your day short.
This is one of those moments where I understand where she's coming from because I understand who she is, but I definitely do not agree. I love soaking up the moment of being in my bed when I'm like fully aware of my faculties, of all my faculties about me, and I'm just relaxing. And then I'm like, I'm tired. Let me close my eyes and sleep. I like making that decision. Like
you like the decision part of going to sleep?
Yeah. I like I'm feeling it coming. Like, let me just give into it. It's not just like, oh, because I really get sad when, and I try to, this is another moment where I was like, okay, let me just like treat her how she wants to be treated and how I would try to make her go to bed. Like she'd fall asleep on the couch and I'm like, just go to your bed. Because if I fell asleep on the couch, I would be really disappointed if I woke up in the middle of the night or in the morning and I was on the couch. I would feel gypped because I love my bed so much. Yeah, I don't
but
like
I'm,
that.
But really. I'm kind of the opposite way. I'm like, I was having great was sleep sleeping. On the couch. Yeah. So why didn't you just leave me there?
I like being wrapped up in my covers. And if I wake up and I realize I didn't have my whole comforter or I cannot
so
like
So you have
over.
A fear of missing out of your bed, of the comfort of your bed. It's just a different priority. Because I don't want to miss a conversation or an event. Like, if I'm asleep on the couch, I could wake back up and still be part of the party. But if I go to bed, then...
Yeah, bed is a final decision for me. It's not like a temporary...
Right. No one's going to go to bed and then come back out to enjoy.
No, I'm saying, like, when I decide I'm going to sleep, I'm going to sleep. Because I don't know if this happens to you, but when I wake up, especially if it's dark outside and I wake up, I feel, like, very anxious and, like, out of sorts.
Okay.
So there's a feeling, like, if you go to sleep when it's light and you wake up and it's nighttime and you didn't mean to sleep and you wake up and you're like, what? What's going on? No? That's just me?
So it's hard to say that because now I work night shift, 12-hour night shift.
Oh, yeah. So
you're
out of
my life
for...
is very different.
Yeah.
So I go to bed at 9 a.m., wake up at 5, 6 p.m.
Yeah.
So to me, it doesn't matter. It's light outside, dark outside. It's just.
Yeah.
My life is totally different now.
But also, I'm an anxious individual, so that probably plays into things as well.
I think you had a fear of missing out on the daylight.
Oh, I do love daylight. I love natural lighting, and yeah, I love daylight. So we can frame it as fear of missing out on daylight. Sure. Yeah. I guess. But I'm not so afraid of missing out on daylight that I need to be up when the sun rises. Definitely not. Mm.
But you're still a morning person, so.
I'm begrudgingly a morning person. I've only just recently come to accept that I'm a morning person because I used to just wake up early and just stay in bed for hours and hours. When I'm awake, I should just give into it because I'm not the kind of person that can fall back asleep after I wake.
But I'm the complete opposite. I can fall asleep anywhere, anytime. So I fall asleep standing up all the time while people are talking to me.
Oh my gosh. This is a whole other life, people, that I just, I cannot understand.
Yeah, you just get your sleep when you can.
No, that sounds awful. I'm here cringing. Get your sleep when you can.
I love it.
What? No. So let's talk about why we're friends. Because we have, like, very different outlooks on life. And opposite in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So I pulled up this article by on thoughtcatalog.com. It's called Here's Why ENFPs and INFJs Make the Best Friends for Each Other. And this is the Myers-Briggs personality thing that I did with JL a couple episodes back. But yes, it says that we are essentially inside-out versions of each other.
What?
It says INFJs and ENFPs use their cognitive functions in the same order. NFTS. But all of the functions that are introverted for the ENFP are extroverted in the INFJ. So they said, like, you can have extroverted feeling or introverted feeling.
Oh.
And I don't remember how all of those things play into each other, but it's just, like, the way that you approach feeling. So, and it's, like, either you're worried about the feelings, like, your own feelings or the feelings of others first, maybe. I don't know. That might be it, but don't quote me because I'm no expert. But this means that the two types often share similar values, but approach them from refreshingly opposite perspectives. An ENFP generates possibilities where the INFJ analyzes the specifics.
That is absolutely true. Absolutely true. Read it again.
An ENFP generates possibilities where an INFJ analyzes the specifics. And an ENFP applies introverted morality to situations where the INFJ looks at the universal consequences.
So, the first example of that would be when we were chilling at the house as roommates and I was like, let's go to Florida, just out of the blue. Because what else are we doing this weekend? Let's just get in the car and drive down to Florida. And Kanisha's like, but how is this actually gonna work?
Yeah, like, where are we gonna stay?
How much is gas gonna cost? Your car doesn't work, Kristen.
Kristen's car would just, like, shut up.
Hey, you just put it in neutral, turn it back on, and keep going.
You get why I was skeptical, right, people?
We would have made it. We might have had to take the megabus back, but we would have made it there.
Yes.
All part of the adventure.
Different sides of the same coin.
But there's just so many examples of,
yeah,
when I come up with an idea to do something, typically to do something, and you're like, let's really think about this, Kristen. And you don't automatically shut me down.
It's just like, how are we going to make this work?
Yeah.
And then in that process, if we decide that it's not going to work, then, hey. Yeah. It's not me, it's the facts. Mm-hmm. Okay, the second one says their reasoning abilities complement one another because their cognitive functions are inverted. INFJs and ENFPs can see each other's blind spots. The ENFP can suggest an idea that would never have occurred to the INFJ, and the INFJ can provide a detailed explanation for what the ENFP does not intuitively understand. These types are basically the yin to the other's yang, and the balance it creates is uncanny.
Maybe that should be our new...
yin and yang?
Yeah.
Which one are you?
I don't know.
When I was reading that, I was thinking, like, which one would be the yin? I don't really know what yin and yang are.
Right. So I think one we need positive. To double check the definitions.
Yeah.
Because we want to be culturally appropriate.
When you say culturally appropriate, that sounds like culturally appropriate is how you culturally appropriate.
Is it?
Because appropriate sounds,
I know they sound very similar, but we want to be culturally appropriate and not culturally appropriate.
I think we should choose a different word to avoid confusion. But I mean, we could workshop that later. Okay, it says both are kind of ambiverted. Although the INFJ is introverted, their extroverted feeling requires them to socialize a fair amount in order to stay balanced. Yeah. And while the ENFP is extroverted, their introverted feeling, oh, you have introverted feeling, Kristen, requires them to withdraw and analyze their feelings more than the average extrovert.
That is very true.
Yeah, I find that to be very true because usually I have an introvert bias against extroverts because I feel like a lot of times they, like, don't spend enough time thinking. Not to say that they don't think.
Speaking for the extroverts.
I know.
Thanks.
I mean, extroverts have done their fair share of speaking negatively about introverts. So I feel like it's my duty to balance the scale some.
So we're just being tit for tat.
Well, I mean, you
two
know.
Two wrongs don't make a right, Kanisha.
I know. But I just feel like, you know, I don't know. I find that in my experience, most extroverts, I don't really feel that comfortable around because I feel like they're moving so quickly that they don't take the time to, like, slow down at all. And I think my pace, I don't think I'm, like, a slow-paced person, really, but I think, like, the way that I think and process information, I don't want to say it's slow, but I, like, take my time with it.
Right.
So.
That makes me think of yesterday when you asked me a question about one of your ideas. And I didn't have an answer for you. And I was like, huh. I wish I had an answer for her immediately, but I don't. But then when I did come up with an answer hours later, it was a good answer.
Yeah, and I think for me, it's been difficult feeling like I don't have time to express myself to people. Like, I don't get the time. There's no space for me to, like, think and then come back because I'm very much, I feel like I know that I'm a very creative person, but I'm not necessarily like a snap, 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 creative. I'm like, I sit down like in a room and I'm sitting like Friday, a couple days ago, I was just sitting at this table all day long and I was coming up with ideas, but it wasn't like idea, idea, idea. It was just like sitting and I'm thinking and then like an idea pops in. I'm like, I don't know what to do about that. And then like another idea comes up and I'm like, oh, maybe I can use it here. But it's not like right off the bat. So I like being able to, like, get, like, a main idea that, like, if someone wants me, like, to come up with an idea, like, give me, like, the gist of it, and, like, let me go and think about it.
Yeah.
And come up with something. And I feel like recently, I feel like because of that, kind of not being able to have the space to do that, I've had a lot of insecurities. And the insecurities are not about my abilities. It's about how I'm perceived by others. And like recently I've been getting like such positive feedback that's causing me to like reevaluate my perceptions of how others
yourself?
Perceive me.
Oh,
because people have been like just telling me like, oh, like when you speak people listen, like people want to hear what you have to say because it feel like it means more when you do have something to say because you're not just out here just saying stuff.
Yeah.
And for me, it's been like, oh, man, if I say something now, it's going to be like, oh, like, you speak? Because I've heard that so many times.
That's your perspective of it.
Yeah. My perspective, like,
of
oh,
how
man.
They will see you.
Yeah, like, man, I haven't said anything this whole time. If I say you something, know, people are like, what?
You know, sometimes when I'm in a room or when I'm at work and I'm sitting at the conference table with all the other supervisors and other, you know, sort of important people, and I say something, it kind of freaks me out sometimes when they all look at me and listen.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute. I knew I had this power, but it's kind of weird to actually, I don't know, take up space or just share your ideas or share your thoughts on that scale.
I think a part of that might be just, like, maturity. Like, with age, people are more willing to listen, maybe. Or, like, to slow down a little bit.
Yes.
Because I'm thinking specifically, we went to someone's house, and, like, we're at a table with people, and, like, I was trying to say something, but like, there was a lot of commotion going on. And then, like, one of the guys at the table was like, oh, wait, guys, she was trying to say something, and, like, kind of quieted everyone down so I could say what I was trying to say. And that was, like, a pivotal moment where I don't think that had ever happened before in my life.
Where someone had stopped and gotten attention for you to actually say what you wanted to say without them knowing the idea beforehand.
Yeah.
So, and I was like, he advocated for you in that moment.
Yeah, and I feel like that was even just, like, a turning point. I mean, based on, like, where we were in our lives at that point, I feel like if I think about that in my head, that's, like, a marker of maturity to, like, be able to, like, create that space for someone else.
Yeah.
And it's been one of my goals for, like, the past couple of years to just take up more space.
Yeah.
Because I find that I'm a very accommodating person. And I find myself accommodating for others when, like, it's very unnecessary that I do so.
I completely agree. Because now when I go into a meeting, I have this mantra that you deserve a seat at the table, and we're going to use this opportunity for whatever it is. Like, your ideas matter. And what you have to say matters. Because there are many times where I think, I don't really have to say that. They understand that already. But sometimes you have to say it because it actually is valuable and no one was thinking of it.
Yeah. And as a person, like, newly coming into adulthood, that's an important thing to, like, have the confidence in yourself to know that people who have been, like, doing this for years and years still don't have your perspective on it.
Right.
It's like, no matter how young you are, you still have, you know, you hear little kids say stuff sometimes and you're like, I never thought about it like that. And they're like, they just got here yesterday. And you're like, oh, wow, that's an interesting way of looking at the world.
Right.
It's like, you know.
It's really that you add value to where you are. You add value to this meeting. You add value to this conversation over dinner. You have valuable thoughts and ideas and things that you can share.
Yeah. So it's funny because when you, well, it wasn't right when you started doing the rotation program, but shortly after I decided that I wanted to, I was supposed to be having a more nomadic life myself, but it kind of took a little bit of a turn. And I think, as with most things in my life, I feel like it's more of a abstract nomadicism.
Yours?
Yes. It's more like mental nomadicism. It's more like, I'm so strange.
You're not strange.
I am.
You're unique.
I mean, for me, strange is not a negative. So, okay. I mean, I'm not being self-deprecating because I hate that.
Great.
But it's just, like, I recognize how, like, it might not make sense. So, you know, I'll just throw that out there. Let's see. Let's see if I can explain this. It's kind of like I'm trying to remember that my person, is my home. And so, like, no matter where I go, I should feel at home because I am in my person. Because there are a lot of times when I'm in social situations and I do not feel at peace. I do not feel comfortable, but I'm just kind of working on being comfortable in myself. Not in who I am, just, like, in my person, because that is always with me.
Yeah, and you can't get away from that, so.
Yeah, and it's not like I have, like, these body image issues or anything like that, but it's just, like, remembering that, like, I am my home. And I say that, I'm like,
so how does that relate to your mental nomadicism?
Oh, well, that's just because no matter where I go,
throughout different social situations, not moving geographically very much.
Yeah, and just, even like being able to find that peace when I'm not in my personal space, that's in my home, it's in my room, where I really am comfortable. We established I love my bed.
Yeah.
I love my room. And I do like to, like, go out and do things, but I feel like the pull of like going back home is like, okay, now I'm in the place where I can relax. I'm in the place where I can like breathe out.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to make that place more nomadic.
Yes.
Carrying that with me, like wherever I go.
It's really not just being at peace and relaxed.
Yeah.
In whatever situation you want to feel that way.
Yeah. Just in whatever situation you end up myself. In. Because when I think about like, so I kind of lapsed on this, but I was doing like more meditation, and my goal was to like be able to just meditate, and by meditate I mean not get wrapped up in my thoughts. So just be able to sit and be, and not have any like external stimuli that I'm paying attention to, because I feel like we spend so much of our time being entertained. There's no really good way to rest your eyes, because your eyes are like always seeing, unless you're closing them. But even when you close them, I was thinking about this, it's kind of weird. They're still looking at the back of your eyelids, you know, like you can't shut your eyes off. Yeah. But the only thing you can really do is just like not commit to like focusing. So what I've been doing like with meditation.
So like zoning out?
Yeah, just being and just focusing more on like the sensation of breathing than like processing everything. It's just kind of like I'm just here experiencing this moment, and I'm not really processing, because I'm a very process heavy person.
Mm-hmm.
But I said that to say, I'm hoping if I talk it will come back to me. Oh, no, yes. Not. Okay. So in bringing that practice, I'm not to be one of those people, but the meditation practice, I would just sit and try to do that for as long as I could sit and do that without like thinking like, how long has it been? And like eventually it would like get longer and longer. I think I got up to like 25 minutes where I was just like being, ideally I would like to do an hour. I know it sounds like a lot of time, but I would like to like get to that point where I can just like sit and be for an hour. And I think that will help me in my experiences in social settings.
Mm-hmm.
Because after I get to an hour, I want to try expanding that and like trying to do that in public, because I find that if I'm just sitting in public,
just sitting on a bench,
or yeah, and just being
at a table, yeah,
because I get in my head about like how I look,
yeah,
like what people are seeing, what do they think I'm doing, what do they like, yeah. Is she just the sad person sitting on
when
a bench?
Really you should just be able to go and sit and enjoy your time.
And I remember like when I went to I did the study abroad in Spain, and then I went to Rome by myself for a few days, and because I was by myself for those days and I didn't have access to my phone. Well, I had my phone. It didn't do anything, but I had my phone. And it's just like, I got so used to not having to be on my phone,
mm-hmm.
That I just wasn't. And people in Rome, they just like stare at you. They just stare, because what else is there to do? Like, I should be able to look. If you're in my field of vision, like, let me look.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. Like, at first it was kind of creepy, but then after a while I was like, okay, like, that makes sense. Why not? And then when I come back, like...
It's not illegal to look at me if I'm in public, right?
I know. And then it's, and that's also, like, with taking up space, because I would find myself on the train, like, the metro or whatever, and I don't have my phone to look at, and I'm just like, oh, shoot, where do I look? Do I just, like, look at the ground? Because I can't look at people. How dare I look at people? It's like, no, like, I have the right to be here. I have the right to, like... look around the room.
Yeah, and observe your surroundings.
Yeah, and observe. Yeah. And I think I have issues with the idea of being an observer, because I am an observer, and I feel like I have felt like that's not enough. Like, to be an observant person isn't enough. Like, you have to be, like, the person offering something to the room.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, yes, our society does not reward the silent observer.
And I think that when you are an observer, then, like, you have taken in enough to offer something when it's time to offer something, you know?
Right.
Offer something different that other people didn't see because they weren't...
Right. There's value in being the observer.
Yeah.
It's just we typically don't give that value to them.
Yeah.
Or we don't recognize how important it is.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a lower class citizen. We give it a lower class citizen.
Yeah.
So the person who's in your friend group who never says anything, well, not never say anything, but the person in your friend group who may not be the first to say something quickly, or
yeah,
they may not seem like they're engaging, but they are engaged.
Right. I think it's just so important to be able to make space for people, and like show them that you value them. Or even, so I think it goes back to like how we talked about like being able to understand the people around you, understand how they process things, mm-hmm. and like where they're coming from in their like connection to the world, so that like you can understand them better and be able to like relate with them better. If you understand that the person who is not saying anything is observing, then that means something more than like, oh, they're just not saying anything.
Yes, because they play an important role in the conversation. You have to have someone who's listening to you and isn't just thinking about the next thing they want to say or the next story they want to share.
Yeah.
I also find that a lot of times I don't share because I feel like there's no one in that group or in that space who's taking the time to actually listen.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes me feel like it's not worth it if you're not going to actively listen to what I have to say.
Yeah.
And I think that's why we're such great friends, because we give each other the time and the space to actually fully share your idea before sharing our perspective.
And I never thought we would have been such great friends, because I really thought Kristen didn't like me when I first met her. She would just like give me these looks whenever I would speak. And I learned that that's just her face when she's thinking.
Yeah.
But I really thought she thought I was dumb.
No, I didn't think you were dumb.
And you just gave me that look. Like
I did, but I give you that look because I want to communicate. Even though I'm being silent, I'm communicating to you that I need you to explain further about something. I use it all the time in class. And it worked really well with my professors. Sit up front, and then you make the confused face, and then they know, oh, my class doesn't understand what I said. Let me explain it more. And I'm like, perfect. I didn't have to raise my hand. I didn't have to say anything. I could just give you a look like, can you please expound?
Yeah. Okay, so we'll wrap up soon, but I do want to see like the last couple points on this article. Number 5 says that they bring out the best in each other. While the INFJ is deeply analytical, they sometimes need an extrovert to help them open up and discuss their deeper thoughts and beliefs. Very on the flip true. Side, the scattered ENFP benefits from the focus and structure that the INFJ brings to their over-the-top ideas. These two types tap into each other's strengths almost effortlessly. I would agree. It seems pretty, like, easy.
To tap into each other's...
Yeah, like it doesn't feel like I'm trying to force you to think, see things my way, or like you're right. trying to, you see something on someone's back and you're like, let me get it for you. It's not like, oh, you have something on your back, it's there, move to the right, move to the left, like, no, down, down, down.
And it's also not like, why'd you go outside and let a bug crawl on you?
Yeah, it's just like, oh, let me, you have a blind spot, let me get it.
Mm.
Okay, the last one says they both take their close relationships very seriously.
Yeah.
As with any friend or relationship, conflict can arise between these two types. The good news is neither of these types will shy away from resolving the issue in the interest of maintaining the relationship. They are both intuitives first and feelers second. The meaning of their inclination in the wake of a disagreement will be to look at the bigger picture. And for ENFPs and INFJs, the bigger picture almost always includes the people they love most. What a beautiful way to end this article. I guess I should say who wrote it, because I definitely did pretty much read the whole thing. This was written by Heidi Priebe? Priebe. And I will link this article in the show notes since I read it all. I feel like it's only fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. I think you're not so big on conflict resolution if like it doesn't matter. Like if the person doesn't
oh
matter,
yeah
or if like
yeah absolutely yeah
but if just, it matters, if it's a relationship that matters to you, then like okay, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Because
if they don't matter, then why am I wasting my time and my energy to actually deal with this conflict when I could just move on with my life and we can move in our separate ways?
And I just really am very big on closure, like regardless. So, like, the thing that I had you reading earlier, I'm going to be cryptic here for a minute.
Oh, yes.
Like, I kind of want to send that to that person so they can see it. Just so they can see it.
I wouldn't.
I know. I wouldn't either. I just kind of want to because it's like, oh man, this was crappy. Look at how crappy you were.
What do you want from it though?
Nothing.
You don't want an apology?
No, I don't want an apology. I just want them to like see,
to realize be able how to see themselves. Much of a bad person they were or maybe currently are.
No, I mean, okay, because I don't know. I think.
Because there's an important lesson in it.
Yeah.
That you should speak to people differently. Like you should, if you're trying to give someone a compliment, give them an actual compliment. Don't give them a backhanded insult.
And I don't know if it makes sense to talk about this on the podcast since I am not sharing what it is. I think it might be kind of annoying to hear. So we can just skip over this.
But I think we should finish talking about this.
We should. On our own. We will. We will. Sorry to deviate, guys. But I just really value the closure of just knowing like, okay, that's done. There's nothing left unsaid there. I know.
I think I'm really good at burying my head in the sand, so I'm not even worried about it.
Yeah.
It's just like, I will make up a story for myself of whatever the situation was.
Have you ever had an experience, though, where, like, you told yourself, like, it was done, it was resolved, like, it's over, whatever, and then, like, you realize that, or, like, you're faced with that person or a similar situation again, and it's like, oh, huh. I never really resolved that. Or, like, I don't know how to act in this situation because, like, it's kind of awkward.
I don't think so.
If you ever do, I'd be interested in hearing about it.
I mean, there's probably someone else out there who knows that, yes, I have done that. But I can't think of anything.
So it's been working for you, so.
Yeah. I wanted to note that Kanisha and I have been friends for 8 years. Are we counting it 8 or 7?
2012. To 2020.
Yeah. So we've been friends for 8 years and we've never had a fight.
No, yeah.
We get along so well that there's never been a fight. There's never been conflict or an argument. There's never been.
Yeah.
Just for some reason, our personalities and just who we are, we just get along so great.
That's really wild. Honestly, so wild.
And we live together too. It's not even like.
Yeah, it's not like we've never had to confront any issues, but it was never an argument.
Right.
It's just like, hey, like.
I wouldn't even call it conflict. It was just, let's discuss.
We need to talk about this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
It's great.
It is. It is.
It goes great with my desire not to have any conflict. My conflict avoidance.
Yeah. Okay, so. Time for the challenge. Uh-oh. I'm not giving you a challenge. We're giving them a challenge.
Okay, great.
It's much nicer telling people what to do. Than
yeah.
Okay, so, given all we've discussed today, the through line has been what?
Being nomadic.
Being nomadic and what that means for us differently, because it's very different.
Right.
And understanding the differences in the people around you so you can, like, relate better to them.
Yeah.
So, given that, what should we challenge people to do this week? Or whenever they listen to this, what's something we can have them?
From my perspective of living in multiple cities, I would challenge everyone to be an urban explorer, which means...
I love that.
I love it too. which means wherever you are, whatever city you're in, whatever town, whatever area you're in, there's something interesting about where you live. So I would challenge you to get in your car, go outside, take a walk, take a bike ride, and just go find something new. Because we travel to other cities to see things, but a lot of times there's a lot right around the corner that we didn't know there was.
Yeah.
Things that are interesting and unique about where we live.
Yeah, I have like a running list of places when I'm driving and I'm like, oh, That name sounds cool. Or, like, it's just a word on a building and it doesn't really give it away what it is. And I'm like, what is that? That sounds like it might be interesting. And, yeah, just, like, figure out what's interesting around you because there's so many things. And there's so many cool things out there that don't have a web presence.
Right.
So when you Google, like, interesting things around me, you get, like, TripAdvisor.
No.
Random.
Don't do that.
Gross.
Just get in the car and go out and take a new route and see what's there.
Yeah.
Or the store you always pass by, actually get out the car and go see what's in there.
Because if you try to look it up online, you're going to get the places that everyone else knows about.
Right. And most of the time, they're so
generic.
Bland.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they make, it's, okay, so they're the things that are just, like, universally accepted as, like, okay, this is the place that you can go, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But what's interesting are the places that are, like, specific.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's an interesting place. It might not be my cup of tea, but it's, like, that's a specific thing.
Yeah.
That, like,
and it's good to know about that.
Yeah.
Because I think it offers you the same benefits of when you go travel abroad. You get a new perspective on the things other people do.
Yeah, and it's like we're so open when we go travel, and like when we're in our own space, we're like, ah, we're like, gotta go to work, gotta go home, gotta get food, and it's just like, okay, just so stuck.
When, it doesn't,
like,
right? It
even
doesn't
our immediate world is bigger than when we allow it to be.
Yeah, it doesn't take money to travel. It doesn't take money to have an adventure.
And that's a wrap. Thanks for hanging out with Kristen and me today. I hope you heard something in our conversation that inspires you to have a conversation with your fam. And if it does, let me know. You can do that by commenting on Instagram, by searching for Fam Talk Pod. You can also send me a voice memo by visiting anchor.fm/famtalk. I'd like to give a big thank you to all of those who have committed to monthly donations to help me keep producing content. If you'd like to add your name to my list of supporters, visit anchor.fm/famtalk and scroll down until you see the support button. You have been listening to Fam Talk. I'm your host, Kenesha Rice, and I'll be back next week with more Fam Talk. But until then, I'm sending peace and love your way. Later, fam.
In 2019, I've been to LA, San Diego, Joshua Tree, Philadelphia, DC, the Poconos, Denver, Houston, London, Dublin, Cork, Naples, Capri, Ibiza, Calgary, Toronto, Atlanta, Vermont, New York City, Rochester, Virginia, Cincinnati, Boston, and the Bahamas. You can follow me on Instagram at diaryofanomad_ to see my next adventures.